Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to Morbid early and ad-free. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
You're listening to a Morbid Network podcast.
Hey guys, I have to tell you about this all-in-one shake that I'm freaking loving. It's called Cachava. I love saying it. It's actually hands down the best thing that I've found to help me get all my essential nutrients into one day. Cachava is the all-in-one superfood shake made up of high-quality plant-based nutrients. It's got greens, superfruits, plant proteins, antioxidants, adaptogens, probiotics. In other words, literally everything that your body craves to feel your best. And I know what you're thinking. Something that good for me cannot possibly taste good. Wrong. That's where Cachava really earns their over 52,000 five-star reviews. It actually tastes freaking amazing. It's very creamy and smooth, and it comes together with just water. And it comes in five delicious flavors. Personally, vanilla and chai are my personal favorites, but it also comes in chocolate, matcha, and coconut acai, which I still need to try. Some people like to drink it as part of a healthy breakfast or lunch, and other people love it as a protein-packed snack before or after a workout. It's really perfect for that because it has 25 grams of plant protein per serving. Personally, I like to add mine to my overnight oats. I add a scoop and I mix it all up to get a little more protein into my oats. And literally, I can have that for breakfast and feel satiated, nourished, beautiful, functioning, all throughout my day. It's incredible. Please send me more of it because I love it so much. It makes me feel very, very good. And guess what, guys? Cachava is offering our listeners 10% off for a limited time. Just go to cachava.com/morbid, spelled K-A-C-H-A-V-A, and get 10% off your first order. That's K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com/morbid.
Guys, it's hard to start working out, and it's even harder to maintain working out, especially if you don't like your fitness routine, which a lot of times it can be dull, just for me personally, that's all I'm saying. But Peloton really keeps me motivated, mainly because I love the instructors and I feel like I'm losing my friends when I'm not on that bike. But also, Peloton helps you start no matter what level you're at. Wherever you're starting, there's thousands of classes to get you moving. Whether that's beginner or advanced rides, feel-good live DJ rides, or artist theme rides, they've got something for you. And like I said, the Peloton bike instructors not only are wonderful and feel like your friends, but they help keep you motivated from day one. They'll show you the basics, you know, take the guesswork out of your workout and encourage you to build. So you're like, I want to make you proud of me. And Peloton Entertainment keeps you moving. Watch your favorite TV shows and live sports as you ride. Perfect for those days when you just don't want to miss a thing. Wherever you're starting, get moving with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at www.onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply.
Hey, weirdos, I'm Ash.
And I'm Elena.
And this is Morbid.
This is Morbid.
What?
I copied you, I'm sorry.
Oh, you're so annoying.
You know what? There's been a lot of stuff going on lately. Not with us.
Not with us.
But with a certain reality show that we have talked about many, many times that
you
I know a lot of you watch.
That it's our time.
These are the best days of our
these are
lives.
Not They're the best not. Days of their lives. Maybe the worst of some of their lives, which Guys. Makes my heart hurt. Like, first and foremost, I think we said it on the JBN episode, but team motherfucking Ariana.
Yeah, in case you don't know, we're talking about Vanderpump Rules. We just went right into it. We're like, team Ariana.
Yeah.
But like, honestly, at this point, it really doesn't even need to be
you know
described. I think somebody described it as Chandler cheating on Monica with Rachel and Joey knowing the entire time, in case you do not watch Vanderpump Rules and you need a frame of reference.
Yes. But like, I feel like even if you don't watch Vanderpump Rules, you've been hearing like the echoes. I was actually getting my Botox done yesterday and I had a new girly like injecting my face. And she said, I was like, do you watch Bravo? Like, do you know what's going on? She was like, so I don't, but I know everything that's going
but
on.
But I know the exact situation you are referring to.
And I think a lot of people are in that situation, like the people that don't watch.
And here's the thing. If you don't watch it and you don't give a shit about this, don't worry. we're getting into a true crime case in a couple minutes. I know a lot of you do. I know a lot of you are with me. So we're going to chat about it for a minute because I swear if I say to John on the couch at night one more time, if I just look up from my phone and go, all right, so one more thing happened. Bless him. Bless his heart.
He's good at like being
great.
What's up?
He was like, okay. Because I looked over at him the other day and I was like, you're my best friend.
Oh,
you need to hear this.
That's adorable.
He was like, okay, all right. I was like, I knew that would get you. But
it's never the same as talking to somebody
who's
like,
been there since the beginning.
Because we started Vanderpump Rules together in 2014. I had just graduated high school and I would skip going to college all the time and just do like my college classes. I don't even know what the fuck they were called. And I just would go to your house and we would like literally eat, sleep, breathe Vanderpump Rules.
It's a really unique reality show in the way that it rarely stops giving.
Rarely.
There
are a couple times, like
here's the thing,
2 or 3 years, but we stuck through them.
We stuck through the Valley Village, purchases. We stuck through them trying to introduce an entirely new cast.
That didn't work out.
But we hung in there.
And we got Charlie out of it. I'm a Charlie stan.
We have always loved Ariana.
Like, never wavered.
I have loved Ariana. You have loved Ariana. She's always been our girl.
Because she's real.
She is.
And I think she's like the realest one out of everyone.
And you know what? It's like you get your ups and downs with people in this crew, but like Ariana's always been a ride or die.
Yeah, she's like a steady, steady girly.
And I am horrified by Tom Sandoval.
And Rachel.
But it's like we need to talk about this just for a second. Tom Sandoval dressed as his mistress for Halloween in front of Ariana.
That's another level of like deep-seated evil. Like he's evil. That's
Rachel
fucked.
Posed for a picture with him dressed as her, knowing full well they were having a full-blown affair at the time.
Yeah.
In front of Ariana. Do you understand that when the two of them come out and go, guys, we're so sorry. We're so sorry that we hurt people. And Rachel's like, I'm going to work on myself. It's like, fuck both of you.
And
are
also,
you kidding me?
Her saying that she needs to heal? What about Ariana, dog?
Well, and it's just, I'm sorry. You're coming out and you two are saying, we're sorry. We never meant to hurt anyone. Oh, my goodness. But you dressed as your mistress for Halloween in front of Ariana while you were having an affair. No one believes that you're sorry. You
created
can't
an
do
entirely
that.
False story to make it seem like Schwartz was the one, like, fucking around with Rachel. And also, that was fucked up in and of itself because he was hot off a divorce with one of their fucking cast members and friends.
And I like Katie. And
I feel Katie, too.
And I feel like that was created and hurt Katie.
It did hurt Katie.
You put Katie in a position to be hurt just so that you could save the weird, like, bro code that these dudes have is unlike anything I have ever seen.
Oh, my God. I was just going to say, I've never seen anything like it.
It goes beyond, like, this plane of reality.
It does.
Because they will sacrifice everything about themselves for their dudes.
Mm-hmm. For their bros.
And it's like, no, there is a time where you need to go, time out. This is bad news bears.
And I'm
like,
not going to create
act this way.
A fake fucking scenario and like dump my life down the dumpster because you want to fook somebody on the side and like step out on your girlfriend. And it's also like they were together for like
Ariana
and Tom were together for 9 years, purchased a home together. Like she has a dog that like I'm sure Tom became like a dad to.
Married for all intents and purposes.
I mean, that's common law marriage. It's 7 years, right?
Yeah. And it's and just that existence is married for all intents and purposes without the paper.
I mean, people ask them all the time. Like people think they're married.
Yeah. And that's
so fucked.
And yeah, it's just a real bummer. And then like seeing in the episode where I think Lala was saying like, you know, to Rachel, she was saying, you know,
like when you drink,
I wouldn't let you around my man, which is like, whoa, you got to really take a look in the mirror if somebody's saying that to you.
And then Rachel's response
was, good thing you don't have a man
for me
to be around. And
insulting.
It's like, whoa, you are gross, my
She's
friend.
Gross. Christina Kelly wrapped it up perfectly when she just pulled back the covers to protect herself from Rachel and was like, Rachel.
She literally goes, oh my God, Rachel.
Christina Kelly.
She said Raquel.
Christina Kelly's like coming back this season is everything to me.
I always thought she was hilarious.
Everything. And we never got enough Christina Kelly. But if you listen to somebody else's podcast, like back when you could, you would get a lot of Christina Kelly.
Yeah.
And I loved that.
It's true. We love a Christina Kelly moment.
We do.
But honestly, the whole thing is wild.
It's insane.
It's getting wilder by the day.
And the other thing, too, is like, so, like, everything is coming out online. But then the season is airing right now, and we are watching it now through such a different lens.
Because as things are happening right now, the affair is already happening.
Like, right now.
So you're watching it, and you're like, oh, no. And it just breaks my heart for Ari. It's so nice to see that all the women are like just banding around flocking around her. And she looks like she's thriving. She's going to come out of this. You never needed him to begin with, girl.
I can't wait to see her revenge story.
Oh, just I can't
like,
wait.
Just like living.
Because she's going to be just fine.
Of course she is.
She's going to be just fine. Ariana,
and she's
going to be just fine.
She's got like a good heart, you can tell.
Come on the podcast, Ariana.
I would shit myself.
We'll talk about everything but this.
Yeah, we don't even have to talk
about
it.
We don't even have to talk about it.
Should we just like start a Bravo podcast?
I know, I would love to.
Oh my God, that's my actual calling in life.
Just to sit here and do this.
That is my actual calling.
But I know a lot of you are with us and because we've gotten a lot of messages that are like, I am a Bravo head and I want to talk about this. So yeah, we just had to get this out because guys.
Yeah, fucking wild, dude.
It doesn't feel real, but it is. There's court documents.
There's court documents. And it's not just Rachel.
No.
There have been other women.
Allegedly.
Allegedly, yeah. Of course.
Allegedly, there have been other women.
Like,
but
oh my
it just keeps coming out more and more and more. And it's getting every worse day. And worse and worse.
Every day.
Yeah, it's wild.
Yeah.
But you know what? We had to get that out.
I'm so stressed.
And you know, I'm sure we'll have something else to bring forth about this on the next episode.
Probably.
I mean, we're probably like, when this comes out, it's going to be a little old, I think. A couple of weeks old.
They're going to be like, oh, okay. They're going to be like, all that information is 2 years old and you didn't even touch upon this huge thing that happened. Like,
we're 2 weeks behind. So.
Well, ahead, technically.
But you know, ahead, technically. On our schedule, we're
not behind.
But yeah, so we had to talk about this. We just had to get it off our chest, honestly. Because we've been screaming about it to Mikey all day.
I know. Mikey is like, I don't watch Bravo, but I would.
But he's into it now.
He will be.
We're getting him into it.
He will be. Honestly. No really good way to transition out of that and into a true crime case.
It's just that's a terrible situation, but my goodness, is this a worse situation?
This is a very sad situation. This case is rough. It hurt me.
Tonight. I don't know this one at all.
Oh, you don't?
No.
I didn't either before I looked into it. And I was just, I think I found this while I was researching something else, actually.
That always happens to me.
Yeah. So, and then I was like, oh, and I fell kind of down this rabbit hole because we'll talk about it. One of the headlines in this case, you read it and you're like, wait, what? So then you start reading more and you're like, oh, okay, well, that's layered.
Yeah.
So it all starts on the afternoon of October 22nd, 2010. So it's not old-timey, guys. It's 2010.
Ash brings it newer.
Of course. Sometimes. Most of the time. But today. So 15-year-old Rebecca Aylward left her house in Maesteg. I looked that up, and I really hope I'm saying it correctly. Maesteg is in Wales. Rebecca had plans to go meet her ex-boyfriend in a wooded area just outside of Aberkenfig, which I also looked up, and I hope I'm saying correctly. Now, she was under the guise that they were actually going to be reconciling because they had recently gone through a breakup. They were going through hard times, you know, but this she was really excited about.
Okay.
So she told her mother, bye, Mom, I love you, as she grabbed her purse and walked out the door. And unfortunately, that would be the last time that Rebecca's mother would see her alive. So let's talk about who Rebecca was. She really went by Becca. So Becca Oatley Aylward was born on February 25th, 1995, to John and Sonia. She was the first child of what would eventually be three kids. And she was beautiful. And she had one of those faces, and we always say this, but I mean it. She had one of those faces where you would see her in a crowd and be like, I want to be that girl's friend. Like, that girl looks cool.
Mm-hmm.
She had the perfect scene bangs because this is 2010.
Yes.
And I tried to cut those, and I was like,
we all tried to have those.
We all did, but Becca had them.
Yeah, she did.
And she fucking rocked them. But beyond looks, she was also a very smart girl. Her mother, Sonia, said, she was born inquisitive, and I knew from well before she could even speak that she was a bright girl, a girl who took everything in.
Like, oh,
she was
I love that.
Very astute.
She was also just a really easy child to raise and to be around. She loved being with her parents. She was really close with her mom. And when she was little, she loved playing dress up in her mom's closet. Aww. She put together like different outfits and accessories, and she'd throw the heels on. And it's just like pure. Oh, I love it.
I love that.
Now, when she entered primary school, she was still known to be pleasant and easygoing. Her parents or her teachers would always tell her parents that they wish they had a class full of Rebecca's.
Oh,
right. And of course, as a parent, that's everything you want to hear.
That's exactly what you want to hear.
And of course, again, it speaks to who Becca is, but it also speaks to her who her parents are.
Yeah, like absolutely.
Raising a great daughter.
For sure it does.
So her natural curiosity and love for things like reading and writing, those things made her a good student. But she also stood out in other ways. She would always stand up for other students if they needed to be stood up for. She would offer help in the classroom. Like, once she got her work done, she was always helping somebody else that needed it.
Just a good person.
She was just willing to be there for someone. Yeah. And her willingness to help was extra appreciated at home because, like I said, she was the oldest and she took that role as oldest very seriously. Her mom would always say that she was like a little mum.
Oh, little mum.
So when her sister Jess was born in 1998, Becca loved helping with the little baby. And it was just like awesome. She would get her like dressed. She loved all her little clothes. Oh. And she wanted to always feed her little sister.
Oh my goodness.
She was so little and she was such a big help.
Yeah, that's how my twins are with the littlest one.
Oh my God, it literally reminded me of that.
Yeah, it's
so
the exact
funny.
Same thing.
And then 5 years later, she had a little brother, Jack, and he was born. And her little mom instinct had not gone anywhere. Oh. It was still there. And given the age difference between Becca and Jack, he really started relying on her kind of like a second mom.
Oh, I love it.
Like, his mom was a wonderful mom.
Of course.
He didn't need a second mom.
But he just got a bonus.
But he got a bonus, for sure. And he would go to her if he couldn't sleep or if he was anxious about school.
Oh, my goodness.
And just, like, confide in Becca and look to her to, like, feel safe and happy, you know?
And think about what, like, a nurturing child you have to be to have that kind of instinct that young.
Yeah.
And to, like, act on it how she did.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So when she entered her teen years, she started thinking more and more seriously about her life beyond secondary school. And by the time she went into high school, her mom recalled that she had already got her life mapped out, she said.
Did you know Fast-Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the U.S. with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the U.S.? They have everything you could possibly want, like fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, houseplants, and so much more. Whatever you're interested in, they have it for you. Find the perfect fit for your climate and space. Fast-Growing Trees makes it easy to order online, and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. And along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, they offer free plant consultation forever. I love Fast-Growing Trees because Drew and I love gardening and stuff like that, but we always forget to run our little errands on the weekend where we go to the nurseries and say, I'd like that tree over there, please. But instead, I can just sit my booty on the couch, type in fastgrowingtrees.com, and get whatever plant I want. I just recently ordered a lemon tree because, mama, when life gives you lemons, you can make lemonade and lots of delicious lemon-flavored desserts, which I'm excited about. And it's going to get to my door in 1 to 2 days, and then I'll have so many lemons. This spring, they have the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code MORBID at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code MORBID at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, code MORBID. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. It was almost the perfect crime. Stacks of cold, hard cash sitting on the table, unguarded. Who wouldn't be tempted to slowly reach their hand out and steal a pile of Monopoly money from the banker? Monopoly is one of those games that can bring out our most devious selves, and Monopoly Go takes that gleeful mischievousness to your phone in a wildly popular twist on the classic that you can play anywhere, anytime. Collect rent from friends on iconic properties, bankrupt them by pulling a heist on their vault, even use a wrecking ball to shut down their monuments. And Monopoly Go has timed tournaments where you can team up with friends to unlock big prizes and try to top the leaderboards. Whether you're helping out your friends or going head-to-head for riches, Monopoly Go is an absolute blast. Go download it now free on the App Store or Google Play.
Sonia wrote that in her book. And she said that Becca was a great student who studied hard. She wanted to pursue a law degree when she went to university.
Damn.
And her ultimate goal was to one day become a barrister, which an intense lawyer.
A very intense lawyer.
You know? That's how I looked it up.
It's the definition.
That's what Google says. It says barrister.
Very intense lawyer.
Look it up.
Esquire.
Yeah, I forgot that part.
Of course.
Now, of course, she also had less career-oriented and, like, more romantic goals for herself.
Yeah, of course.
Relatable. Now, according to her mom, she would, quote, spend lots of time planning every last detail of her wedding, drawing her ideal wedding dress right down to the flowers that she'd have in her bouquet.
She's multifaceted.
Multifaceted. And I just, like, I feel like you know who she is based off everything you get from her mom and, like, what you see of her in pictures, like— She just seems fucking rad.
Yeah, she's got that, like, romance gene where she can be whimsy and romance.
And you can talk love.
But she can also sit there and be like, listen, this is what I want to do. I want to be a serious barrister. I want to work my ass off.
And also I have this motherly instinct.
And also I can mum my little siblings because I'm this nurturing, wonderful, encouraging human.
Like, what couldn't she do?
Like, I'm sorry. Like, do you exist? What?
Right? Seriously. Like, she just sounds like an angel.
Yeah, and she does.
Like, she was an angel.
Yeah.
Now, she met a prospective love interest named Joshua Davies in 2008.
Uh-oh.
And he quickly became a regular presence in their family home. This family welcomed him with open arms.
That makes me even sadder because I don't think this is going to be a good thing.
That's a pretty good feeling you had right there. Mom Sonia would later say, pretty much right off the bat, Josh was loved and accepted by everybody in the family. And especially that Becca's little brother, Jack, really started to look up to Josh the more and more time they spent together as, like, a big brother.
Oh.
And Josh really seemed to be equally as fond of them. At an age where most teenagers started kind of pulling away from their parents, Josh actually seemed like he enjoyed hanging out with Becca and her family and, like, wanted to be, like, as a family unit.
And that's, you want that.
Totally. And he especially liked Sonia. Like, he found it easy to talk to Sonia. And at the time, Sonia felt like it was easy to talk to him. They would talk about music a lot together because they both really loved music. And Sonia would end up telling reporters in 2018, I liked him before it happened. He was okay. He was always polite and nice, no bad language. He seemed like a decent boy. We all knew his family. His younger brother was friends with my two younger ones. So this is like a community of people.
And these are always the things that stress me out so much is when you hear them, like, people be like,
he was in my home.
Like, I liked him.
Mm-hmm.
There was no reason to think anything different. It's like, that is the scariest thing.
And
there's no warning sign.
That's exactly it. Because I think a lot of times when we say this, like, murderers and serial killers, people are like, oh my God, like, how could you not know?
Yeah.
Like, they were so evil. Like, look at them. And it's like, no, the thing is, they can switch that charming, like, I'm an amazing person little switch on so easily.
Exactly.
And blend right
in. They are master manipulators.
Mm-hmm.
Master.
And that's an alliteration.
There you go.
Now, in retrospect, obviously, Sonia could see that there were red flags indicating that Josh might not have been as nice and polite as he appeared to be. There were times where he would stay over for, like, no reason, and Sonia didn't know why, but she would tell Jack to put his things away, especially his toy swords or, like, potentially hurtful items.
Mm-hmm.
It was like she subconsciously wanted to keep these things away from Josh.
Ooh.
Like a mother's instinct.
Yeah.
Now, this is like he was racist. So if you don't want to hear that, skip forward a little bit. There was an incident where they were watching television together and they saw members of the KKK and Josh commented that he wanted to join the KKK.
Time to get out.
Time to get the fuck out of my house
and time to get the fuck away from my kid.
And his actual comment was, like, way more explicit to the point where I didn't even feel comfortable repeating it here. I'm sure you can find it in an article if you would like to know.
Ew.
But it was horrible. So in the moment, Becca being, I mean, this is in front of her family. So that's putting her in a real shit position of,
like, she's like, what the fuck?
Where did that come
from?
So she lightly scolded him, but she tried to play it off like he was kidding. Remember, she's 15.
And she's probably hoping he is.
She's exactly hoping she is. But Sonia was made really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
She was like, what? That came out of left
field.
She's
like, that is not a joke.
And that's not what we are about in our house.
Like, that's not our humor.
Yeah. She didn't like that.
Yeah.
So she ended up, when Josh Josh had gone home talking to Becca about it. And she was like, what was that about?
Yeah.
And Becca ended up telling her mom how uncomfortable she was and how shocked she was. And she said later on, actually, her and Josh got into an argument about it.
Oh, and it makes me so sad because that's exactly how this should have gone.
Mm-hmm.
Where, like, you didn't escalate things. You didn't make it a scary situation, because if he says something like that, you're like, okay, I don't know what you're capable of here. So when he leaves, the mom did the right thing. Sonia did the right thing. She walked up, she told her daughter, that made me very uncomfortable.
What was that about?
Her daughter agreed and said, it made me very uncomfortable. Like, that's a really good, that shows a really good relationship and a really good, like, line of communication between mom and daughter.
Clear communication.
She didn't blow it up to make it weird for her kid.
Mm-hmm.
She talked to her afterwards and her kid felt the same way.
Exactly.
It's like, that is like a really good relationship. And it makes me so sad that it couldn't have translated into, because that's such a difficult situation after that, because it's like, now you have to hope that your 16-year-old has the strength to walk away from that. But then at the same time, someone who will say something like that, that's dangerous and scary. And leaving them can create a more dangerous situation. So it's like, that's a really difficult set of things, circumstances.
Exactly. And at the same time, where Sonia was like so stressed out about this, she also can't force her daughter to break up with her boyfriend.
Well, that's the thing. And it's like, you are helpless.
And you don't want to try to go down that route and then lose that clear line of communication with her.
Exactly.
And feel like she's hiding things from you. So I think personally, just like you, I think Sonia went about this the best way she could.
I think she did the very right thing. And I think if she had pushed, if you push too hard, especially at that age, like 16,
they're going to pull.
I'm terrified for teenage years just because of, I know it's a precarious time. I remember how I was like,
oh God, I was awful.
You don't listen to anybody. And it's like, if somebody pushes too hard one way, you might go down the same way. And it's like, so I know she probably didn't want to push the issue and make her want to cling to him more just out of going against.
Defiance, you know.
Even though it doesn't sound like Rebecca was that type of kid.
Not at all.
You just don't want to play with fire with that stuff. So,
and you never know is the other thing. Like, we've covered cases where, like, they were never that kind of kid and then one thing happens and you go down a trail.
Exactly.
That wasn't the case here, luckily.
Yeah.
It sounds like it was with Josh. Like, things just started going awry with him. And the change in his personality was happening slowly, gradually. Like, little things Sonia was starting to pick up on, Becca was starting to pick up on, and just getting, like, more and more uncomfortable.
And that's worse.
Yes.
Because you're not able to absorb it all at once, so it's not – it's harder to – manage kind
of
thing.
They've already shown you such an amazing side of them, and they've love bombed you,
exactly.
And you're in this now. So now they can start peeling back those layers slowly,
and it makes it harder to rip away.
Exactly, exactly. So yeah, it happened gradually, but Becca and her mom were seeing a slightly darker side of Josh emerging. He started spending hours in the woods with his best friend Daniel, and they would occasionally camp out in the woods overnight. And this just made Sonia really uneasy.
Yeah, like, what the hell are you doing?
And then it made her particularly uneasy because they started trying to convince girls from school to come camp out with them in the woods. And Sonia told Becca, she insisted, she was like, you never, ever go into those woods with them alone or with anybody else. Even if you think there's going to be other kids there, do not go into the woods with them.
No.
So.
Oh, how scary.
Things were getting weird. Now, Josh, obviously, like I was saying earlier, he seemed to love Becca's family. He seemed to like spending time with them. But at school and around their friends, he didn't really seem to be proud to be with Becca. And he also wanted to hide the fact that they were a couple. It reminded me of when we were talking about the Betty story a couple weeks ago. It's like, why would you not be proud of
Becca? Yeah, it's like, fuck you. Becca's awesome.
She is, and you're not.
And you are not, my friend.
So the relationship really fell apart in January 2010, and Josh was the one, actually, that ended up breaking up with Becca and immediately started dating another girl. Now, the reason for the breakup, or the reasons, they're still unclear, but Josh occasionally told his friends it was because Becca had, quote, tried to trick him into getting her pregnant. Which was not true.
Doubt it.
Doubt it.
Doubt it.
That's the thing. Most people, including us, who heard this explanation thought it was complete nonsense. And even Becca was like, no, he broke up with me, actually, because I wouldn't have unprotected sex with him.
Thanks, though.
Complete opposite.
Yeah.
Thanks, though.
Yeah.
Now, they had only dated 3 or 4 months, but Becca was really heartbroken over this.
Of course, you're 16.
It was probably one of her first loves or potentially her first love.
Yeah.
She was devastated by the end of it, and she was going through it, you know?
Of course.
But Josh, on the other hand, he seemed angry with Becca. And it's like, but you're the one that broke up with her.
Yeah.
Like, I'm confused here.
Yeah.
And then after the breakup, he started making comments to his friends about killing Becca.
What the fuck?
We started joking about killing her.
Guys, no one jokes about killing someone. That's a flat out blanket statement.
One of the biggest themes in this case is joking, quote unquote, about killing somebody. Murder is not funny.
Yeah.
Murder is not a joke. Murder does not have a punchline.
Yeah.
And those are your three rules.
If someone's, and especially if someone is consistently joking about murdering someone, a particular person, call the fucking authorities.
Call the authorities. Everybody. Tell your mom. Tell a trusted adult.
Tell someone.
Call someone.
Tell the mailman. Tell someone.
Tell someone. And especially if the comments are starting to build and build to be more and more specific, like what happened here. And he told one friend after their breakup, I'm just going to kill her. Wouldn't life be a lot easier if she wasn't here?
Just, no, she's not, like, go away.
Also, you're fucking 16 years old. Life is as easy as it's possibly going
to
get.
You're going to live the rest of your life, probably never have to see her again.
You could walk yourself down to the principal's office and say, hey, I don't really want to be in classes with her anymore. And they'll probably rearrange your whole fucking schedule.
Exactly.
And even if they don't, deal. Sit at a different fucking table.
Yeah, like, you're 15. Get
out
of here.
You broke up with her. Remove yourself from the situation. I don't really think she wants to be around you at this point.
Exactly. Well, I just said exactly like you. I've been finding myself doing that.
I love that.
I think you've like rubbed off on me.
We love a little tea pronunciation.
I just realized that I did. I was like, ooh, good job. I pronounced that tea.
Ma would be so proud of you.
She would.
We love pronouncing things. Now, Josh's friends, like we were just saying, thought the comments and the threats were just a joke. But like I was kind of alluding to earlier, as time went by, they started getting more and more detailed, more and more specific, and more intense. He was talking about how he could poison Becca with deadly plants and nightshades. Or, quote, push her over a quarry into a river.
What the fuck? Are you like the mad scientist from A Nightmare Before Christmas? Like,
honestly,
what the fuck is wrong with you?
Where the fuck are you going to get nightshade?
Nightshade?
And like, the reason he wanted to push her into a river is because she couldn't swim. And he knew that.
Oh, my God.
So how fucked is that?
Guys, call someone.
Now, one friend would later tell the court it was no secret that he hated Rebecca for quite a long time after their relationship finished. But it's so confusing because you broke up with her. Like, I don't understand.
That's what a breakup is.
Right.
You don't like each other anymore.
So you break up and then you move on.
And it sounds like, didn't he start dating someone else? Like, if I was that girl, I'd be like, can you not obsessively talk about killing your ex-girlfriend?
Yeah, I'd be a little
alarmed. Where was your brain, girlfriend?
Mm-hmm.
Jesus.
Now, it seems like despite his charming personality with adults, Becca had seen Josh's darker side probably more times than she ended up admitting to her mom, most likely out of uncomfortability, if that's a word, or being scared.
Yeah.
Now, during the investigation into her murder, detectives, with help from Sonia, actually found several pieces of evidence indicating that Josh was actually abusive toward Becca.
Fuck that guy.
Mm-hmm. There were countless pages of threatening and abusive MSN chats. Do you remember those?
Oh my God, MSN chats.
They used to chat over that, and like he was awful to her. And actually, there was one incident where he used colored hairspray to write, Becca is a slag, on her bedroom wall.
What the fuck?
Defaced her parents' property and in her room wrote, Becca is a slag.
Like, I cannot imagine having to deal with this shit as Becca, but I can't imagine having to deal with this shit as the parents.
No.
Because there's, what a helpless feeling.
And I don't know if Sonia realized that, like, that had happened when it did.
Until after the
fact. If she found out
about
it later.
That's the thing. It's like, I can't even imagine knowing that later.
Right.
Ugh.
It's awful. Now, even adults obviously struggle to keep it friendly and amicable after a breakup. So the fact that there was some animosity and heartbreak between Josh and Becca, who were two teenagers, it's understandable, or would have been. But this situation is completely different. His hatred of Becca was just, like, very overblown, very unusual. Again, especially considering the fact that he was the one to end it.
Yeah, like, move on.
And Sonia thinks this anger all stems from Josh's ego.
Mm-hmm.
Because once he got what he wanted from Becca, and she started setting boundaries around things like sex, Josh ended the relationship.
Yep.
Intending to hurt Becca.
Yep.
And he did hurt her, but not for very long. I think he thought like this was just going to be the end all be all for her.
Oh, yeah.
But when her heartbreak started to wear off, she proved herself to be way more resilient than Josh had ever expected.
Of course.
She completely bounced back.
Yep.
She was doing incredible in school. So much so, actually, that she was doing better than him. And I
Good.
Think that miffed his ego.
Yep.
If he had intended their breakup as another way to control Becca, his plan was backfiring, and that's what pissed him off.
He failed.
And it was backfiring in a very public way, so I think he felt embarrassed.
Oh my God, get over your fucking ego.
Seriously.
Like, Jesus Christ.
If you look up a picture of him.
Oh, I did.
Ego, 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 ego.
Yeah.
It's oozing out of his pores.
Yeah.
Are you the kind of person who loves a touch-up on the go, or maybe you're a full glam while in the carpool kind of human? Maybe there's no time for a full face in the morning between kids, pets, work, all of that. Maybe you woke up late. Well, Maybelline's new Instant Age Rewind Eraser Foundation is perfect for those moments when life moves fast. I absolutely love this foundation because it doesn't settle into any fine lines or wrinkles, and you can just toss this thing in your purse. You say, oh my gosh, I have a little smudge right here. Let me fix it really quick. It's perfect. And it's now in 16 shades. It offers SPF 20, which like that's amazing. It's got moisturizing pro vitamin B5. And I love the applicator. It's a blurring sponge. So you can just tap, tap, tap it to reset your foundation and you are good. Shop Maybelline's new Instant Age Rewind Eraser Foundation at amazon.com/instant-eraser-foundation. In 2015, HBO's The Jinx unraveled one of the most notorious unsolved crimes in New York's history, exposing long-buried information discovered during the filmmaker's decades-long investigation of Robert Durst, scion of New York's billionaire real estate family. Now, The Jinx is back for part two, where the filmmakers continued investigating for 8 years, uncovering hidden material, Durst's prison calls, and interviews with people who had never come forward. If you're looking for more about The Jinx, you can also check out The Jinx podcast. Hosted by director Andrew Jarecki and EP Zach Stewart Pontier, the podcast will begin with an episode-by-episode look back of part one, featuring never-before-heard audio between Durst and Jarecki, along with insights from the series' creators. Then the podcast will cover The Jinx part two as the series releases on Max. Watch the HBO original documentary series The Jinx Part 2, streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Jinx podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts. So by the end of the school year, Becca had actually already started dating another boy, another Josh, actually.
Ooh.
But this is Josh Humphreys.
Better Josh.
Better Josh. The new relationship really seemed to piss Josh Davies off because she had moved on. And when it came, and I think he was really specifically angry about Becca's family welcoming this new Josh in.
Mm.
And he would constantly ask her if her mom liked this new Josh as much as she had liked him.
It's like, are you all right?
Exactly.
Bro.
It's also like, you could still be a part of this family if you weren't
exactly.
a piece of shit.
Like, but you suck.
It was like he felt some kind of ownership, not only over Becca, but her family.
Yeah, it's like, all ego.
He felt like he deserved their mm-hmm. love. So weird. And he would say things to her like, I bet she prefers me to be your boyfriend. Talking
Probably
about
not.
The mom. I'm like, no, I don't think so.
I'm going to say that's a no.
And Becca would be like, no, I think actually she does like new Josh. She's a big fan of him.
You know what Josh doesn't do? Joke about being in part of the KKK.
Yeah, that's so, one of his most wonderful qualities.
It's pretty shining quality to me.
But when she would tell him like, yeah, my mom actually does love him and so does my brother and everybody else, he would like storm off away from her in anger and like make a spectacle.
What a child.
Literally.
What a literal toddler.
So Sonia thinks, again, that it wasn't only just the ego, but that it was Becca's resilience, too, that made Josh Davies so pissed off.
Yep.
He hoped that this was going to devastate her, but just a month or so after he'd broken up with her, Sonia said she was doing better than him in school, she was popular and had a boyfriend, and perhaps most of all, she was always her own person.
Go, Becca.
I know. Now, while she may have been resilient and independent, unfortunately, she wasn't entirely free from Josh's influence and control over her.
It's hard, especially at that age.
When you're 15. This girl's 15 years old. Like, I remember being there and dating awful people. Not as awful as this, luckily, but you're in a cloud, like in a haze, and you don't know.
You just don't know any better. You'll believe a lot of things.
Exactly. And especially as a romantic, you will
write things off. Yeah, she's a romantic. And so it's like you just have that.
Exactly. Now, just a few months after she had started dating new Josh, she actually ended the relationship because old Josh started hinting that he wanted to get back together if she would like get rid of her current boyfriend. Mm-hmm. So she did, because remember, she knows old Josh. And whatever piece of her still loved him.
Yeah.
I get it.
It was like that he showed you the good parts and that's what you hang on to.
And I think because she was a romantic, and this is just an inference because, like, speaking from experience, I wonder if she had the, like, I can fix him mentality.
Oh, I wonder too, yeah.
Like, my mom really did like him, so, like, there must be some good piece of him.
And there was all these good times.
And, like, I'm good, so I can show him how to be good. Mm-hmm. I think it was that.
Yeah.
So when their relationship ended toward the end of summer, Becca stayed friends with Josh Humphreys, luckily, but she was still holding out hope that she and Josh Davies would get back together. Now, bad Josh was still privately, quote-unquote, joking with his friends that he could kill Becca and get away with it.
Friends, you gotta speak up.
Like, oh, these friends are pieces of shit.
I was gonna say, this is on your shit, too.
Yeah. So by that fall, even his friends had joined in.
Oh, fuck all of you.
Mm-hmm. They would say later that they thought it was all a joke.
It's
but
not
again,
a joke, you assholes.
Louder like, for the people in the back. Joking about murder simply is not funny.
Yeah, if you got friends that are joking about specifically murdering one person, you got to move on. Get out of there.
And call someone. Report that.
Let people know.
That's not just going to go away.
Especially as like a teenager.
Yeah.
If you're a young kid, that's not normal behavior.
No, and
everybody.
You don't just, like, stop joking about murder
no,
one day.
It's never a
it's
joke.
It's going to escalate.
Like, I never had any friends who joked about killing someone. It never
literally
happened.
Never.
Don't let it happen.
No. So back to the morning of October 22nd. Becca woke up early on that morning, and she told her mom she was just too excited to stay to sleep because she had plans to meet up with Josh that afternoon, and he was still hinting heavily that he wanted to get back together. She actually went out shopping with her Aunt Linda the day before and bought a new outfit for the date. She bought a red jacket and brown ankle boots.
That destroys my heart.
And she just hoped that that would impress Josh and that they could start things up again. She spent most of the morning just anxiously killing time. At one point, Sonia drew a bath for her to try to get her, like, you know, like, excited. She was like, okay, like, let's have, like, a fancy bath and, you know, like, we'll really do this.
See, that's so sweet.
Yeah, she was just killing time until she was supposed to meet Josh in the woods just outside of Aberkenfig. Now, as the morning went on, Becca was starting to get more and more concerned because she hadn't heard from Josh about these plans. They had made these plans earlier this week, or earlier that week, excuse me, that he was going to text her when he was ready. But by that afternoon, she still hadn't heard from him. So Becca tried to reassure her, and she said, you know what boys are like. He's probably still in bed.
Yeah.
Now, when Josh finally did text, it was around 1 p.m., and Becca immediately called her Aunt Linda, who was going to be driving her to the park, and she was like, it's time to go, and she was so excited. When Linda arrived, she grabbed her handbag, Becca did, and rushed out the door. But just as she was about to head out, she looked at her mom, and like I said, she said, bye, Mom, I love you.
Oh, that's the part that just
ruins
wrenches my heart out.
Ruins you.
I mean, thank goodness she said that, but like,
seriously.
No one should ever look at their kid for the last time.
Never.
You know, like, it's just that, like, walking out the door.
No.
That's just awful.
So when Sonia heard about the plans that Becca had made with Josh that afternoon, she was immediately suspicious and uneasy about it because she knew how badly the breakup had affected Becca. And again, she had learned some of those manipulative and abusive things that he had said and done both before and after the relationship had ended.
Yeah.
But Becca had been working on her mom and trying to convince her that things were better. She said things had changed, and she said, he's okay now. He's back to the old Josh again.
Oh, we've all done that.
We totally have.
And you, like, just want your mom to, like, you're like, come on. Like, I know. Like, it's always that classic, I know him. He's different when he's just with me. You know, like, it's always, I've said those words before.
Of course.
You know, like, I remember
trying. I think so many people have.
Yeah. I remember trying to convince my parents that, like, like bad John was like, no, you don't understand. He's so sweet. Like he's so good to me. He does that. And it's like, you know, in your heart that it's not the truth, but you want it to be the truth.
And a mama knows.
And a mama always knows.
And Sonia knew. But at the same time, I just think she was like a really good mom. And I think she wanted to tell Becca, like, you know, I'm really cautious about this, but I want you to be happy. That's the impression that I get.
Exactly. And you also want your kid to experience and learn from situations instead of just directing them what to do.
Right.
And it's like, you would never think something like this would happen, whatever is about to happen. And it's like, you think, okay, there might be some heartbreak out of this. I am predicting it, but I will just be here for her.
Exactly.
I can only give her so much to go out there with. Mm-hmm. But if she is dead set on trying this again, I will just be here to pick up the pieces. And it's like, that's all you can do.
Right.
And then hopefully they learn from that and they take it into the next relationship or whatever.
Exactly.
And so I think she was doing all the right things, in my opinion.
I think she was.
That's
too.
Really all you can do as a parent.
I completely agree.
Be a really hard position to be in.
And I think it was because everything in her was telling her, like, I don't know about this guy.
Yeah.
But nothing inside of her was telling her, like,
I think
Becca could get physically hurt.
No.
Emotionally, absolutely. Physically,
no. You never would believe that.
No. But the suspicions that things weren't going to really go well crept back up when Becca called her mom about an hour after she had been dropped off at the park to say that she still hadn't heard from Josh. So he texted her at 1 and said, I'm ready. Like, let's go meet. She got dropped off at the park. And again, I'm pretty sure Sonia didn't realize that they were going to go off into the woods because she had told Becca, like, mm-hmm. don't go into the woods.
Yeah.
She thought this was the park. And now she's been waiting at that park for an hour and hasn't heard anything. So Sonia's like, what the fuck? She's worried. And she doesn't want Becca hanging around a random park all afternoon by herself. So she's getting more and more frustrated. She's like, this is getting ridiculous. He's giving you all these elaborate directions of where to go and what time to be
like,
there.
No.
He's not even showing up. She was like, it was some kind of mission between two secret spies. Like, it was ridiculous.
Yes. No.
On his end. Now, Becca was like, no, mom, it's okay. Like, I'm safe. There's actually a policewoman walking right behind me. Like, I'm okay. And so they chatted for a bit because I think Sonia was like, well, stay on the phone with me a little bit. Like, I'm nervous. And as they were on the phone, Becca finally spotted Josh walking down the street in her direction. So she was like, oh, I see him. Like, we're good. And I'll talk to you later. And Sonia's like, okay, like, be careful. I love you. Now, what happened next is not entirely clear. Josh Davies would eventually admit to killing Becca. He did kill her.
That's good.
But the confession actually came well after a trial was over. And his confession was rather light on the specifics.
Mm.
So because of that, the details of Becca's murder would end up being kind of cobbled together from the forensic evidence and testimony of his friends.
Mm-hmm.
From what the investigators pieced together, Josh and Becca had walked to his house, actually, and spent a little bit of time there. And while they were there, this breaks my fucking heart because I picture, like, us doing this. Becca gave her sister a call to give her an update and, like, said, like, it's going well. Like, this is what we're doing.
My God, this kills me.
It's just so pure.
It is. Like, she's just, this is everybody.
Just, like, a typical teenage girl, so excited about, like, rekindling a relationship and, like, calling your sister, like, your best friend, be like, it's all happening, you know?
Yeah, like, it kills me.
It's awful. So at some point, they left Josh's house for the woods nearby. And they made their way to an isolated area in the trees.
And this probably kills her mom, too, because her mom was so specific about do not go in those woods.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
15-year-old's gonna 15-year-old.
Of course. You know? And nothing would have ever gone through Becca's mind, like,
no.
I shouldn't go into the woods because he's gonna kill me.
She would have never walked into those woods if she had any inkling that he was gonna do something to
her.
She
probably was just like, ooh, this is like a fun little,
of course,
like, romantic,
a romantic
rendezvous.
Little rendezvous. Exactly.
Yep.
That's like, you know, that's what she was thinking in her head.
Yeah, like, oh my God.
Taking me for a walk in the woods.
Did you ever go into the woods with boys?
No, I didn't actually.
We looked at, like, I would have, like, little meetups and, like, there was this really cute
boy. But I
boy.
Can get it. Like, I could get why that would
yeah,
be.
Yeah, and, like, why it's exciting. Like, I have had that experience and you're so excited.
Yeah, of course.
But they'd either been talking or potentially arguing. We don't know because, again, their relationship did get contentious at points. And Becca turned away from Josh for a moment during this. With her back turned to him, he grabbed her around the throat suddenly out of nowhere and actually was attempting to break her neck but he didn't know how to. And she started screaming, obviously. And he was afraid that her screams were going to draw attention, he said. So he grabbed a rock that was, quote unquote, the size of a rugby ball.
What the fuck?
And while Becca was still facing away from him, he hit her on the back of the head with that rock.
Oh my God.
So she fell to the ground and started screaming because probably most likely her skull was fractured at that point. Oh. And he just kept hitting her and hitting her while she's down on the ground, like face down.
Wow, what a big, tough guy.
Exactly. And he would later tell his friends, and this is very graphic, that the worst part of all of it was, quote, seeing Becca's skull give away.
Oh my God.
This was brutal. Brutal on a level that I can't believe he's a 16-year-old boy.
That's what is really getting me.
This is a 16-year-old that did this to a girl he claimed to love.
Oh.
He hit her a total of 6 times, which caused obviously significant head trauma and brain damage that would ultimately be the cause of death. And after the 6th strike, he realized that the rock was covered in blood and hair, so he tossed it into some nearby bushes.
Wow.
You're so callous.
Awesome.
So callous.
You're disgusting.
And he also told friends that there was blood on Becca's face, so he flipped her over to lay face down at one point so that, quote, nobody would see it.
What?
You're leaving her in the middle of the woods. Somebody's going to see her. Like,
if somebody finds her, they're going to examine her body, you idiot.
It's like, no, I think you flipped her over because you're a piece of shit and probably couldn't look at what you just done.
You had to look her in the face.
Exactly.
Asshole.
Then he left her and just went back to his aunt's house.
Just left her in the middle of the woods.
And he started working on an alibi for himself immediately.
You're a piece of shit, Josh.
Immediately. He changed his Facebook status to say that he was chilling out with friends. Oh, and they just watched Strictly Come Dancing on TV. And then he sent a bunch of texts to Becca's phone saying that people were starting to worry about her and that
she better
get into contact with someone to let them know where she was. Gaslighting her even in death.
My God.
Even in death,
that
still
is so much like thought and so much like, wow.
And it proves that you can't go on later and say that you were, had gone quote unquote insane in that moment.
Yeah, you can't.
Like you don't have an insanity defense.
You took very serious and very intentful steps to cover this up and make it look like you didn't do it because you knew that you had just murdered someone in cold blood.
Mm-hmm. And it wasn't even just like he flipped in the moment kind of thing. He had been talking about killing her for weeks.
Of course.
And we'll find out there are entire text chains that will support that.
Jesus.
When we get time to talk to a jury.
Who are these people that are texting with him about this?
Pieces of shit.
Like, come on, everybody. Jesus.
Pieces of shit.
It always bums me out when you hear that, like, a whole group of people are like this. It's like, what the fuck? Like,
where did you find each other?
Yeah.
So as the afternoon started turning over into the evening, Linda, who was the aunt of Becca and Sonia's sister. So Linda calls Sonia and she's like, I haven't heard from Becca about where she wants to be picked up. And I just have this gut feeling. Like, Linda just felt like something was off.
Yeah, this family's close.
And she actually told Sonia she isn't coming home tonight.
Oh.
She just knew it. I've read that a million times.
Yeah, that just gave me full chills.
And I still just got them. Oof. And Linda couldn't put into words why she felt that way. It was just something she knew.
That's so scary.
And Sonia was like, of course she's coming home tonight. Like, she's going to be home later. She probably just got held up somewhere. Because I think in her mind, she was like, I can't go there right now.
Oh, of course not.
And then she remembered that Becca had mentioned something about Josh's mom driving her home if it had gotten too late, like into their hangout. But still, Linda couldn't shake the feeling. The first indication that something definitely wasn't right came later that night when Linda again called Sonia to tell her that she had actually talked to Josh's dad, Linda had.
Hmm.
And the dad told her that he hadn't seen his son or Becca at all that day.
Ooh.
So by that evening, panic really was starting to set in. Every call to Becca was going unanswered, and that was very unsettling.
Oof.
Because before Becca had left the house earlier that day, Sonia had actually given Becca her cell phone to use. Because remember, this is 2010.
Oh.
Becca's cell phone had run out of minutes.
Oh.
But Sonia didn't want her without a cell phone, so she was like, take mine.
Good mama.
Now, since Sonia didn't have her own phone, she had to borrow a phone from her brother, and it was running out of battery. And it wasn't like you could just throw it on a charger and it was, like, good to go.
Yeah.
Those were the days when, like, you had to throw it on a charger and, like, let it sit.
Oh, yeah.
So that made her totally reliant on information from others, and especially so because she was afraid to leave the house in case Becca came back.
In case she showed up, yeah.
Right. So Sonia ended up calling the police at 7:15 p.m. to report her daughter missing, and the search for Becca officially began.
Oh, this is horrifying.
It is. Now, as the night unfolded, friends and family, they searched for Becca everywhere they could think of looking, anywhere she could possibly be. Linda and Becca's little sister, Jess, went to Josh Humphrey's house, the good Josh, but nobody was home. So from there, they went to Sarn, where Becca was supposed to meet with Josh Davies that afternoon, like the park. Now, while all that was going on, Sonia was able to charge the phone from her brother, and she was just calling Becca and Josh's numbers over and over and over, desperate to get an answer, but getting nothing.
So Josh is just seeing millions of phone calls from this girl's mother.
Yep, and ignoring them. Yep, totally. And she also tried to get into contact with good Josh, but each time she would say who was calling, he would hang up on her and eventually stopped answering calls. There's an answer for that later.
Because I was like, Josh.
I know, I was too.
Good Josh. Why am I calling you that?
Don't get mad at him. Okay. Don't get mad at him.
Okay.
There was a reason. Now, Sonia was finally able to reach Josh Davies at his grandmother's house. It's kind of confusing because he's at his house at one point. He's at his aunt's house. Yeah. And he's at his grandma's. I don't know if they all live on the same street or what. But she was able to get in contact with him at 9 o'clock that night.
My God, her panic.
So Becca had left the house around 1. She's been gone for like 8 hours at this point. And he told Sonia that he actually wasn't able to meet up with Becca that afternoon. And so maybe she had gone to kill some time with Josh Humphreys. Now, for a minute, Sonia was like, I guess that makes sense. And she's in a state where she's desperate to find her daughter safe. And that's a reasonable answer. So she's like, okay, like in her head, kind of trying to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
But then she remembered that earlier when she was talking to Becca on the phone, she had said that she saw Josh coming down the street. So she said, are you telling me you weren't standing in front of her while she was on the phone to me? And he paused and then said, no.
Wow, liar.
So Sonia asked again, like, so did you see Becca today? Giving him another opportunity.
You wanna come clean here?
And he just repeated the story that he had already told. He hadn't seen Becca, and as far as he knew, she was with Humphreys.
Your pants are on fucking fire.
God, I wish. So the police finally arrived at Sonia's house around 9:30, and they ran the usual battery of questions. Did she have any reason to run away? Did she have any reason or history of doing something like this? So on and so forth.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, let's just paint her to be somebody who just runs away when things get tough.
And it's like, the answer is no. Move on.
And so at first, of course, the officers kind of suspected that Becca had gone to a party and drank too much. So now she was waiting to sober up before coming home, not wanting to get into trouble.
Yeah, seems legit.
And Sonia was like, no, Becca doesn't drink.
Probably not.
Becca doesn't drink. She said, actually, Becca did drink over the summer, this past summer, and she had a really bad experience. She actually ended up blacking out and she fucking hated it and she never wanted to drink again.
Yeah.
So no, that's not the case. But the police, they still insisted that this was the most logical explanation, and they were going to go around and check the usual party spots. So they wasted time after her mom told her,
she's
not at a party. And they were like, okay, we're going to go check.
We're going to go check some parties.
Which, like, I get to an extent. I know you have to rule it out, but it's like, do you have to spread all your resources
I was going
to
say, you want to check party spots, by all means,
couple officers.
For sure, but you got to split up your resources and start checking other places, too. You can't narrow it down right now.
Exactly, especially when you're being told that that's probably not where to
look. Yeah.
Hey. Hey, you. Are you listening? Because we're about to talk about one of my freaking favorite sponsors, Happy Egg. I'm genuinely obsessed with them. Please send me all the eggs. I love you so much. Guys, we cover some spooky stories, but nothing is scarier to me than the thought of hens being trapped in cages. It hurts me a lot. But at Happy Egg, all of their hens roam on 8 or more acres of land, leaving no mystery as to why their eggs are the best best. They are cared for by small family farmers and live their best hen lives every single day, day in and day out. Aside from their hens roaming across over 8 acres of farmland, they also have plenty of access to fresh water and nutritious feed. They're living, baby. This goes above the traditional free-range farming, but it's what they believe is better for their birds overall. And all of this results in eggs with plump orange yolks that are full of flavor and quite literally to die for. I would sell my soul for these eggs. Next time you're at the store, look for the yellow carton. Choose Happy. Go to happyegg.com/morbid and get $2 off your next carton of Happy Eggs. I love them!
Now, the rest of the night was just a flurry of phone calls, late night drives around town, just desperately searching for her.
Literal horror.
No results. So at 7 a.m. the next morning, Sonia called the police again, but they had no update for her. Now, when she called again an hour later at 8 a.m., she was told that the officer handling this specific case had been called away, quote, on a rapid response.
Oh, no.
So she knew. As soon as she heard rapid response, she was like, I know. It was harrowing. Her heart sank into her stomach, and she was like, this emergency absolutely has something to do with Becca's disappearance.
Oh, God.
And unfortunately, she was right. Earlier that morning, officers were searching near the park where Becca was last seen, and they found her. She was obviously, as we know, lying face down in that isolated area of the woods. They'd spent all morning following up on leads they'd gathered throughout the night. And they spoke to Joshua Humphreys, who told them he had been at a club the night before. So when Sonia called from an unknown number, he kept hanging up because he couldn't hear her over the music.
Oh.
And he thought it was somebody who had the wrong number.
Oh,
which,
okay.
That makes sense.
I'm not going to yell at you, Josh.
Exactly. Maybe just say
also, like, why were you at a club?
I think he might have been a little older.
I was going to say.
And also,
you go home.
I think you can go to clubs a little bit
younger. I think it's like it probably means something a little different than what I'm thinking of.
Yeah. Also, they used to have like teen nights at clubs.
Yeah.
TBT to when my cell phone got stolen at one.
Yep.
Good times. Anyways, he couldn't hear her, so that's why he was hanging up. Now, they then explained to Sonia that they had found Becca's body through information from actually one of Josh Davies' friends, Liam Thomas. Liam told his mom that he knew Josh had done something to Becca, so Liam's dad immediately called the police to report the information, and after hearing a little more from Liam, they were able to locate Becca's body. Now, I'm glad that Liam finally said something. Took a long time.
Yeah, it's a little too late.
Oh, it's...
I would say.
And yeah. Yeah.
And also, it's like very interesting that you were able to send them right to where she was.
Oh, we know why.
Mm-hmm.
The detectives also told Sonia that they had arrested two boys that they believed were responsible, not Liam, Joshua Davies and Daniel Ninnis.
You can just imagine that if I was Sonia, I'd be like, just put me in a room with them.
Mm-hmm.
Just put me in a room with them.
Mm-hmm. And she's sitting there in complete disbelief that a boy she had welcomed into her home.
That had played with her
played with her youngest children.
Yeah.
Who she treated like she would treat her own son.
Yep.
Could be responsible for this. And she actually assumed that Daniel Ninnis was the one who was truly responsible.
Yeah, because why would you ever think it's the boy that you knew?
Right. And Ninnis actually hated Becca because Becca had turned him down on a date a year previous.
Oh my God, the fragility of these fucking boys.
Right?
The fragility.
Mm-hmm.
My God.
So Sonia's assumption was reasonable, but the detective actually corrected her when she was like, it must have been Daniel. He was like, no, it's Josh who's actually responsible. And the detective chief inspector, John, I believe it's Penhale, told Sonia, I've not seen anything like it.
Ugh.
So Liam had been the one to also bring up Daniel to the police. And now both Daniel and Josh, like I said, had been arrested. And of course, they were sitting in separate rooms blaming each other.
Of course.
So it was going to take some digging and pressing to get the truth out of them. But now let's get into the dynamic between the three friends and what happened the day of the murder before it happened. That morning, Josh actually wasn't in bed. He had met up with those two friends. Or excuse me, he had met up with Liam Thomas at Cafe 107 in downtown Aberkenfig. They usually met on Saturday mornings for breakfast. So they waited about a half hour for Daniel, who was supposed to meet them, but he didn't show up. So they walked to, I believe, Josh's house. Now, during their walk, that was when Becca started texting Josh about the plans. So later on, they ended up meeting with Daniel, and Josh told his two friends his plan to meet Becca that afternoon in the forest and said, I'm finally going to go through with my plan.
Guys, call someone.
No, Alina, they said that they thought he was joking.
My God, I can't.
And they said, actually, they thought he was joking and informed investigators, actually, that they joined in themselves and suggested various ways for Josh to kill and dispose of Becca.
What is wrong with these little fucks?
Like, just typical breakfast behavior.
Yeah.
The fuck? I guess by this point, everybody knew about Josh's hatred of Becca, and killing her was just a regular topic of their conversations.
That's so fucked up.
Because a few weeks earlier, when the three of them had met up at that breakfast cafe, the subject had come up. And when they all parted ways after breakfast, Josh texted Liam, who I don't like, and said, "What would you do if I actually did kill her?" And he responded, Liam said, "Oh, I would buy you a breakfast."
I would buy you a breakfast.
If you murdered a human being.
Wow.
So, like,
round them all up.
Cool that you told your daddy and your mommy that you were so scared.
Yeah.
And that Josh had done something. You knew that he was going to do something.
Yeah.
The entire time. And you lolled and said you were going to buy him breakfast for
it. Yeah, these are disgusting little shits.
So go fuck yourself, yeah, Liam.
Truly.
Now, around 1 o'clock that afternoon, Josh headed out, as we know, to meet Becca. And before walking off, he solidified what he was going to go do and said to his friends, "The time has come." Straight up implying that he was about to go head off and kill his ex-girlfriend. And not one of them said shit to their parents.
Yeah, no, I'm not impressed.
Not at all.
Not impressed by these kids.
It's like, sure, maybe he was joking the first 99 million times, but if your friend is walking away from you implying that they're heading off to go murder someone, call someone,
yeah,
and then reevaluate your friendships.
That's the thing. I'm like, what are you doing?
So about an hour and a half had gone by, and Liam decided to text Josh to find out what was going on. It's like, were you excited?
Like, yeah, like, did you do it?
So his text went unanswered because, as we know, that was going on. So Josh's silence prompted both boys to actually leave Daniel's house and walk down to the park where Josh said he was going to meet Becca, which to me says they were starting to worry that he was going to do something.
Absolutely. They were going down to see if it was happening.
Mm-hmm. But after finding nobody there, they returned to Daniel's house. And a short time later, they ended up calling Josh, and he actually answered. And they were like, "Are you still with Becca?" And his answer was, "Define with."
I want to wail on this kid. Like, I cannot.
I would.
Vlogging.
I would get on a plane to Wales just to throw a cup of piss in his face.
Oh, just to spit in his eye.
Literally.
My God.
So he said, "Define with." Ugh. And then he asked both boys to come back to the area to meet him, which they did. And they got there just after 2:30. So this all happened very quickly.
Yeah.
So standing at the entrance to the forest, Liam called Josh again. And when he answered, Josh demanded to speak with Daniel. And he said Daniel needed to come meet him in that remote part of the woods. The only reason that Liam didn't go with him is because he was on crutches because of a rugby injury. So off Daniel went into the forest. Mark my motherfucking words, mm-hmm, if that boy hadn't been on crutches,
his
ass would have been following like the little piece of shit follower he was.
Like the little lamb that he is.
Mm-hmm. So Daniel returned a little bit later and told Liam that he had seen Becca's body lying face down on the ground and said that Josh didn't seem fazed or upset by any of it.
My God.
And then they all went back to Daniel's house to hang.
Oh, okay.
He had just taken a human life.
And showed you.
Showed you it. And now you're all just gonna bro out this afternoon?
Disgusting.
What the motherfuck, dude?
Truly disgusting.
So at the house, Josh told them everything that happened. I don't know if Daniel was like overwhelmed or couldn't accept it or if he's a fucking piece of shit. I think the latter. But he didn't seem at all emotional, Liam said. Now, Liam was starting to freak the fuck out.
As you should.
He couldn't tell whether Daniel and Josh were telling the truth. But at the same time, nothing about what they were saying felt right to him. So he called his mom and asked her to pick him up as soon as possible. And before he left, Josh made Liam delete all the text messages between them and told both of his friends, if anybody asked, to say that they had all been together all afternoon.
My God, this kid is diabolical.
And also, sweetie pie sugar buns, text messages don't go anywhere.
Exactly. If they want those, they're going to get those, mm-hmm, honey.
So when he was arrested, Josh Davies told the police, oh, it was all Daniel.
Yeah.
He murdered Becca. I had nothing to do with it.
No, of course not.
He said he had only told Daniel that he killed Becca in order to prank him because LOL. And then when Daniel arrived at the scene and discovered that Becca was in fact not dead, he went into a rage and grabbed a rock from the ground and murdered her in anger.
Yeah, that's likely.
What?
Seems like a legit scenario.
Didn't take long for investigators to determine that that was a lie.
Yeah.
And Daniel Ninnis was actually released into his parents' custody 36 hours after he was arrested.
Which he shouldn't be.
No, and I think Liam should have been arrested, in my opinion. You're an accessory.
I agree.
You were there. So the news about Becca's murder and the arrest of the two local boys was reported a few days later, to the absolute shock and horror of this small community.
Horrifying.
The area actually had recently seen a large uptick in the number of murders that year. And at that point, it was second on the list to the village of Pontrypid, I believe, as Wales' murder capital.
Oh my God.
So they were like, what the fuck is going on around here? And then the details in Becca's case, they seemed worse than anything else that had gone on that year. And it would only get worse when more details would come out in trial.
Oh, God.
Now, because Josh was a minor at the time of this, the police actually couldn't release his name to the public. So nobody knew who this was. But they were able to release his age, which, again, came as a major shock to this community. He was, I think I may have accidentally said earlier that he was 16. He was 15.
Oh, my God.
15.
That's horrifying.
Like, it's one thing for a teenager to be murdered by an adult, but like, that's horrific and terrifying and scary. But for a teenager to brutally kill another teenager for quite literally zero fucking reason.
No reason.
That community was rocked.
Yeah.
They were terrified. And they were like,
of course.
Is this the start of some kind of social shift that no one wants to go through?
What the fuck?
So Josh actually pleaded not guilty to Becca's murder.
Oh, okay.
Even though there was a ton of evidence against him and interviews to the contrary,
mm-hmm.
but he continued to insist that it was Daniel who had killed Becca. And since his arrest, he had been housed at, I believe it's Vinnie Green. It's on the outskirts of Bristol, and it's for young offenders who have committed like really serious crimes.
Okay.
So like an intense juvie.
Yeah.
Now, the authorities were actually so nervous that the inmates might want to take revenge, like the local inmates who would maybe would have known Becca or even still just like knew where she was from.
Yeah.
They were scared that they were going to want to like retaliate. And so they couldn't tell anybody that Josh was in there for the murder of a local girl. So instead, they said that he was being held on possession of GHB.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, okay. Yeah,
let's not do that. Like, let's not protect him.
I agree, but at the same time, I'm like, protect him during the trial so that the family can get peace
thing,
and
yeah.
then feed him to the fucking wolves.
But then you deal with the consequences of your actions,
exactly.
My
and I think that's kind of what this was. It was like, let's get through trial.
No, it makes sense.
Because
it's just like initial reaction. You're like, no, don't hide what he did.
Oh, that's my initial reaction,
but you are
too.
Absolutely correct.
So he was mostly kept away from the other inmates to avoid any issue before trial.
Mm-hmm.
Now, after 8 months of negotiations, plannings, pretrial hearings, it all took forever. Josh Davies' trial finally began at the Crown Court of Swansea on June 22nd, 2011. And it was expected to last around 5 weeks. So the prosecutor was Greg Taylor. And in his opening statement, he told the jury all about the breakup, how Josh had bragged about wanting to kill Becca for a while now. He continued to place the blame for her murder on his best friend. And he said to the jury, quote, there's no doubt Rebecca was murdered. She was hit a number of times to the head with a rock in a forest in Aberkenfig. It was raining. She was left for dead on the forest floor in new clothes bought for her the day before.
Ugh.
The prosecution says this boy sitting on the bench before you committed the murder. And then he went on to tell the jury in full detail about all the abuse that Becca had suffered from Josh in the months after their breakup and during their relationship.
Fuck this kid.
He included when he was telling to the jury that Josh had told a friend, I want to make her life hell and you won't convince me otherwise.
What the fuck was wrong with him?
So many things.
Oh.
Now, to close out his opening statement, Taylor drove home just how callous and cold Josh was by telling the jury about the breakfast bet between the friends.
That's truly incredible.
Mm-hmm. And then told them about the group chat that the three of them shared, where they went back and forth with ideas on how to kill Becca. You know, jokingly.
That's why these other two should be in trouble.
I agree too. You're an accessory.
Like, what are you doing? And something, and I'm worried about you two if you were talking about that.
And I don't understand why they couldn't have been got on conspiracy to commit murder.
Yeah.
That's exactly what this
they
was.
They were planning it.
Exactly. It's so messed up.
You want to pretend it was a joke? It's not. She was murdered.
Mm-hmm.
So now you're in trouble.
And you should be.
Yeah.
So that's really frustrating to me that they weren't.
It's infuriating.
The first two witnesses called on the first day of trial were Becca's friends, and they were able to give even more details about the abuse and the constant talk of killing Becca. One of the friends, actually, who was testifying, had even been in a fight with Josh over how he was treating Becca, but things were getting so contentious that Becca actually texted him, thanking him for standing up for her, but saying not to, because it was basically implying it would just make things worse.
Yeah.
Now, the third witness called that day was Becca's mom, Sonia.
Ugh.
Among other things, she told the jury about her daughter's relationship with Josh, the way he had been welcomed into her family. And she told the jury how she had been, and she said she was very cross with him in that past year for how he was treating Becca after the breakup. And she told them how she was anxious that fall when Becca started bringing up the idea of getting back together with him. And finally, she told the jury all about the morning that Becca had spent getting ready so excitedly to meet Josh.
That kills me.
She said how she was so excited she couldn't even sleep. She told them about the bubble bath that she had prepared for Becca to get ready, just like a little girl time.
Yeah.
And how nervous Becca was, but excited to start the relationship back up again.
That kills me.
And it must have been fucking gut-wrenching for her to go through that.
Yeah.
But I'm so glad she got the opportunity to paint that picture for the jury.
Yeah.
Like, my little girl was so fucking excited for this, and this is what he did to her.
It's
fucked. So when she finished answering the prosecutor's questions, Sonia prepared herself for the cross-examination by Josh's defense lawyer, Peter Rauch. Since Josh had tried to place all the blame on Daniel, Sonia was expecting a ton of questions about Daniel and his relationship with Becca.
Mm-hmm.
But he only had one singular, very bizarre question for Sonia. Just one.
Ooh.
He asked her, could Becca swim? And when Sonia said, no, she couldn't, he declared he had no further questions.
That's chilling.
How weird is that? Now, the question confused Sonia, and it would actually be weeks until she learned it was asked because there was a supposed plan that Josh Davies had developed with Daniel Ninnis to throw Becca into a lake or quarry, which he thought would be easy because of her inability to swim.
That is... No, my brain, like, won't even comprehend this.
I don't really understand what the defense thought they were doing here. Like, what was the rest of your line of questioning?
Because it's like...
was it bolstered when she said, no, she couldn't swim?
Well, I think that's but what a risky move to make.
It backfired.
Because it's like, that was a 50-50 shot.
Mm-hmm.
If she says yes, then maybe you can say, well, then this wasn't him planning her death. She can swim. Like, they were just going to,
that must
they
have
were
been
pranking
the plan.
Her.
Right.
But if there's a 50 shot, she says no.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've just outed the fact that he was definitely planning to kill her because she couldn't swim.
Well, and I think that's why he had no line of further questioning.
But, like, why would you even give that a shot? That is a risky... That's bad lawyer.
Bad lawyer right
bad
there.
Bad lawyer.
Now, there was a ton of testimony given in court, but once they'd adjourned for the day, all the press could report on was the ridiculous joke about Josh winning a free breakfast. And that was actually the headline that I saw, and I was like, what the fuck? So I started reading about this case.
What the fuck?
Now, the headline of the Times the next day read, youth murdered girl after promise of a free breakfast.
That's so fucked up.
Like, sensationalizing this entire thing.
Yeah.
And also completely ignoring the detailed accounts of abuse and threats that led up to the murder.
Yeah.
He didn't just murder her for free breakfast. There
exactly.
was way more at play there. But of course, following lead, countless other news outlets honed in on the free breakfast comment.
Just concentrated on that.
And this became the free breakfast case.
Of course.
It's like, you're completely ignoring the themes of domestic violence and abuse here, but
yeah.
Cool.
Can we please talk about that?
Now, of course, while it may have been blown out of proportion, the comment about the free breakfast was of significance to the prosecution's case because it shows how callous and cold
they
are.
No, it's definitely important, for sure.
But it's the but fact it's like, that it was sensationalized by the media is not cool.
And the fact that it's being, like, touted as, like, this is why
the
he
motive.
Did it. It's like, no, it's even worse.
Yeah.
That, like, there really
there
is
really
no reason.
One.
Like, that was just a joke.
Mm-hmm. But for the prosecution, they were like, we can use this because it shows intent and premeditation. That I understand.
I totally get that.
A little malice of forethought for
you. There you go.
So the jury was actually shown two text message chains between the friends. The first messages shown were sent the week before and included that original comment about the breakfast. And the second chain occurred the Thursday before the murder, and I'm going to read it to you.
Okay.
So Josh texts Liam and says, don't say anything, but you may just owe me a breakfast.
What the fuck?
And Liam says, best text I ever had, mate. Seriously, if it is true, I'm happy to pay for a breakfast.
Pick up Liam, everybody. Let's go pick up that little shit stain.
Then Josh said, I hope by then it will be done and dusted. Liam said, I want all the details, you sadistic bastard. Smiley face. Josh said, large breakfast with extras of everything. And Liam writes back, sick, sick boy.
I have no words. Fucked.
Fucked, and you are just as motherfucking guilty.
That's like shocking.
And for
that kid was just out fine, like free.
Sick, sick boy. Also, you guys are being fucking weird.
Well, I was just going to say, are you all right?
Yeah.
Like, okay. Do you need a minute?
And then to act like you're this terrified little puppy dog who's so scared that you're going to get in trouble that you had to call mommy to come get you. Go fuck yourself.
Yeah, it's like here you are talking a big game to your friend, the murderer.
And did you tell your mom that part?
Yeah.
Were you scared of yourself?
Did you tell your mom that you wanted every detail and you told him that with a winky smiley face?
And that you were the one going to get the free breakfast?
Yeah. Did you let mommy and daddy know that?
Did you let them know? Liam, you piece of shit. Ugh, I'm like red in the face. I'm so angry. I can feel it.
So gross.
So the next day at trial, Daniel Ninnis and Liam Thomas's statements were given in two parts. First, the jury saw video testimony where both boys gave their accounts of what happened. And then each boy was called to the stand to testify again to what they had seen and heard on the day of the murder. And I hope they were shaking in their fucking boots.
Yeah.
And I hope everyone on that jury saw them for exactly what they were, accessories to murder.
Exactly.
There were slight variations in their stories, of course, because they're two teenage boys and they're not going to see things the same, but they were pretty much the same. And like many of the other teenagers who gave statements and testimony, they both said they never took Josh seriously. Daniel told the prosecutor, I thought it was a joke, a sort of slag-off sort of thing.
Oh God, shut the fuck up.
But he did admit to the jury and to the prosecutor that in the weeks before the murder, Josh's violent rhetoric got, quote-unquote, a lot more weird and specific. But still, everyone just thought he was angry and just talking shit.
But still, we decided, let's not say anything.
Eh, whatever.
Yeah.
So after the testimony from Ninnis and Thomas, two pieces of human garbage and wet lettuce and everything awful in the world, like that junk that gets caught in your dish strainer when you're like in the sink and then it starts to smell bad.
Absolutely.
After that, a forensic analysis provided the jury with an overview of the physical evidence collected at the scene, which included 12 fibers from Josh's jacket on the rock that had been used.
Ooh.
So you really want to sit there and say it was Daniel?
Good try.
Not going to lie, Daniel's a piece of shit, but I don't think
say,
he was the one to do it.
They're all pieces of shit, but varying levels of pieces of shit.
Exactly. Now, the pathologist, Dr. Stephen Ledbetter, I believe it is, provided a detailed account of the injuries that Becca had sustained. He told the court, given the fragmentation of the skull, there had been blunt impact to the back of the head. But the grazes, bruising, and splits to the face might not have been due to direct impact, but from the surface against which the face was lying, against further impact from the back of the head.
Okay.
So basically what he was saying was like, there was a lot of damage to the back of the head, but then when we looked at the front of her face, there were scratches and bruises everywhere. But that was because he was essentially beating her into the ground from the, as she was lying face down.
Oh, that's awful.
Brutal. Absolutely brutal.
Truly.
And his testimony stressed how brutal this was, because not only had Josh tried to break Becca's neck, he also continued this assault on her after she was motionless on the ground. This was overkill. So closing arguments were given by the prosecution and the defense on July 21st, and then the jury adjourned to deliberate. And they actually deliberated for nearly 3 days.
Oh, wow.
And they returned their verdict on Wednesday, July 27th, guilty as fuck.
Guilty, guilty, guilty.
So on September 2nd, 2011, Josh headed back to Swansea for sentencing. And the judge in the case, Justice Lloyd Jones, read him to fucking filth.
Good.
And showed just how disgusted he was with Josh's complete lack of remorse for the murder. He described him as devious, calculating, and controlling, and added that he robbed the Aylward and Oatley families of watching their, quote, precious and perfect girl flourish into a successful young woman.
It's so true.
It is, because she would have been like a star in this world.
Yeah, like, she would have.
She would have gone on
she
to
had
do
all
huge
the pieces.
Things. And just and she would have added like so much kindness to wherever she was. She just seemed like
it makes
that
me
way.
So sick.
Now, when he finished with Josh, he sentenced him to life in prison with a minimum of 14 years,
bye.
Which was the maximum penalty allowed for an underage offender.
Bye, bitch.
And when the trial concluded, Sonia was able to make a statement to the press where she called for the return of the death penalty.
Oh, damn.
And told them she hoped Josh would never see the outside of prison again. She
said, can't say I blame her.
I don't blame her at all. I would have said the exact same thing.
Yeah.
She said, we will never forgive him for tearing our world
good.
Apart so brutally. And I would welcome the return of capital punishment for the likes of Joshua Davies, who forfeited his human rights when he chose to take my daughter's life.
Yeah, and I don't blame her one bit.
I still, like, my goosebumps have goosebumps.
I don't blame her one bit.
Nope, I would have said
that's
the
her
exact
baby.
Same thing.
That's her baby.
And that's like, her first baby.
Yeah,
like,
that is your baby girl. You have a right to say whatever the hell you want to this piece of filth.
Like, Becca made her a mom.
Yeah.
And he took that away.
Oh, I can't, it's...
He could never take that away.
But that...
But he took Becca.
Took that baby away from her.
So at the end of the day, Sonia was as happy as she could be with the outcome of the trial, and she knew that the judge imposed the maximum sentence allowed. So there was that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, overall, just the fact that a teenager could be so cruel to murder his ex-girlfriend for what they thought was a free breakfast was totally sensational, like I was saying, and readers were shocked around the UK. But I think it's so important to stress that it wasn't about free breakfast. Josh was controlling and he was abusive and he manipulated Becca during their relationship and after it. I think he hoped that dumping her would be devastating to her, but it wasn't. So this was like a final dig when he didn't have any use for her anymore.
Because she didn't need you. And that's what upset him.
That's exactly,
she didn't need him.
Exactly what it was. He was an abuser. And I think killing Becca was his final act of control over
Absolutely.
Her. Now, when the trial ended, Sonia actually ended up moving her family away from the area to start the grieving process. And in 2014, she published Bye, Mom, I Love You, which is a memoir about her experience with the justice system in the wake of Becca's murder.
Oh, my God. Destroy my heart.
And I actually ended up using it a lot for research on this case. And so did Dave.
Dave.
And now in 2018, Josh Davies actually finally confessed to Becca's murder. Interestingly enough.
He actually confessed.
In 2018, though.
Oh, but you had said he didn't get, he was very vague, right?
He was very vague. His reasons for murder still remain unclear.
Piece of shit to the end.
And Sonia believes that his confession was only made in preparation for an appeal.
Yeah.
Which I agree.
I absolutely agree with that.
She told reporters, he's only doing it for his own benefit. Not that he has any empathy for this family. It's cruel.
It is cruel.
Mm-hmm. Now, if that is the case, like if he does try to go up for an appeal or probation or anything like that, Sonia and Becca's sister Jess are ready and waiting with their own victim impact statements, and they are hoping that that will keep Josh in jail for as long as humanly possible.
Hell yeah.
And I will get on a fucking plane to Wales if they need
Seriously.
Me to and stand there next to them.
After hearing this, I'm like, hell yes.
Like, keep that motherfucker in jail.
Is there a petition?
I don't think anything has happened yet. Like, no kind of appeal
when the time
that I
comes,
saw.
If there's an appeal,
we're doing it.
Get that shit going.
Hell yeah.
Because that is a horrifying tale.
A horrifying, horrifying tale. It reminds me of the Slender Man stabbing.
It does.
Like that
yeah, it's got
case.
That same vibe.
It does. It. But even
it's kids.
It's just the kid stuff.
Kids hurting kids, like always. Oof.
It's just awful.
Destroys me.
And it's like, oh,
so senseless.
For what?
Yeah.
For what?
Because
you're
ego?
A piece of shit? And exactly, for
How
your
is your ego.
Ego
doing now?
Yeah,
How's
seriously.
How's it doing, Josh?
In prison? How you doing in there? And he thought he was going to get away with it.
Yeah, of course he did. He thought he was diabolical. Yeah. He was like, oh, I got this. I'm cunning. I can do it.
And then I'll just go get free breakfast.
Yeah, I'll get free breakfast and I'll blame it on my friend and like, it'll be fine.
I hope the every breakfast he has gives him food poisoning.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Fuck you.
Diarrhea.
Fuck you.
Fuck you. But yeah, guys.
Horrifying.
That was the sad, sad case of Rebecca Aylward.
Wow. Well, thank you for sharing.
No prob. So yeah, guys, we hope you keep listening.
And we hope you
keep it weird. I don't have to tell you not to keep it this weird. And if I do, oh my God.
Call someone.
Everyone.
Or someone to call someone for you.
Call, call, call.
Yeah.
911. What's your emergency? This.
If you like Morbid, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.